Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast brought to you today by Keep It and their local partner, Cactus Backup. I'm joined now by Frederick Scobo, co-founder of Keep It, for a discussion on the importance of securing and backing up your company's cloud data. Frederick, welcome. This is actually Tech Central's first podcast of 2021. So thanks for joining us now all the way from Copenhagen in Denmark. What's the weather like over there?
Well, hello, and thank you for having me on this very first 2021 broadcast from Tech Central. The weather is almost beautiful. It is slightly snowing, but we had weather the other day. So as you can see, the football field behind me is still green. So the hope is green.
Yes. Is that, well, we were chatting just before the podcast started. Is that a famous football field behind you?
Yeah, that's the second famous one. But actually, our offices has the central football stadium of Denmark just inside the offices, so we can watch all the football matches in Copenhagen.
Oh, fantastic. So you don't even have to leave the office or buy a ticket. Fantastic. Yeah. Now, Frederick, we were also chatting about the COVID-19 situation here in South Africa. We are, of course, going into a second lockdown. We're seeing the second wave of infections across the country, much higher peak than the first. We hear a lot about what's happening in America and what's happening in Britain, but not so much about Denmark. What's the COVID situation like there at the moment?
So we are also in our second lockdown quite heavily, because we have this new mutant coming both from South Africa and the British version.
I'm sorry. So,
very careful in the country. But seem to be coping quite well. The infections numbers are going down every day, so we're quite pleased with that.
Okay, that's good. Sounds like you're a bit ahead of us. We may still have our peak ahead of us. We're seeing about, I think it's about 18,000 to 20,000 new infections a day. But let's hope COVID isn't the predominant story of 2021 like it was in 2020, because there's lots of other interesting things to talk about, right, Frederick? And one of those, of course, is what your company does. And I was doing a bit of research ahead of our discussion today, and Keep It does sound like a very interesting company. You co-founded this business with a high school mate of yours. You actually started a hosting company, if I remember correctly, back in the mid-1990s, which eventually, I believe, got quite sizable before you sold it just a couple of years ago to focus on Keep It. Was Keep It a spin-off of the hosting business?
So Keep It was actually part of the hosting business.
Okay.
When we in the hosting business looked at what is the next big thing, besides from hosting emails and home pages, we also saw that people were getting digital cameras. So we are way back 10 years ago. And we actually developed a piece of software that could back up computers for private individuals. So our first aim was actually to create a consumer-based backup as a service.
Okay.
Now, that then changed into a B2B play, because we could see that there was a much more at stake for businesses securing the data. And so Keep It coexisted with our hosting company, and we actually experienced the need of backup in our hosting business, because we had a flooding from a rainfall, which was sort of a 100-year event, right atop of our data center.
Our
data center got flooded, but we didn't lose any bit of data in that process, because we had Keep It. So everything came back as it should, because Keep It keeps data outside the confines of our data center. So we had it in a separate location, which is ultimately what Keep It also offers our current customers, is that we get it outside the domain of the providers that you keep your data with.
As a matter of interest, was that data center salvageable after that flood?
So we were actually growing that data center. It was just sitting next to SAP in Denmark, so it was a good location. Mm-hmm. The water came from the land side, not from the sea side. You know, Denmark is very covered by sea, but ultimately we actually moved into a separate data center. But it took I think, for us to be in total operation mode, it took us 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Sure, that's quite an event to happen to your business. But you've had some very positive developments at the same time, just in the last little while. I'm not entirely sure when this happened. Maybe you can fill us in. But you recently announced a large Series A investment from a company called OnePeak. When was that deal announced, and how much did you raise, if you're allowed to disclose that?
Oh yeah, we're allowed to disclose that. So we went ahead. We have been bootstrapping mm-hmm. based on our hosting company. We were able to actually bootstrap the company, and ultimately we also saw that this was a big market. We couldn't serve it with our own bootstrap money. Mm-hmm. So we went out to seek $30 million in the Series A, and we closed that the last day of summer, so August was the closing of that investment from OnePeak, who actually went in and saw this market as a $15 billion opportunity, where we have developed some very unique software to cater for the needs at our customer sites.
Right. Now, you mentioned you started originally focusing on a retail consumer audience, but you've since pivoted. What was the reasoning behind the pivot?
The reasoning was that we did everything that a business student should do, launching a new business, doing the research that you are able to do, mm-hmm. looking at buying behaviors, buying intent, purchase intent, and all those things turned out to be false.
Right.
So ultimately, we took our business case and sort of trashed that and said we need to pivot the first time. And that was the first time when we then pivoted into a B2B setting. Mm-hmm. Where customers can actually put a value on the data. Mm. And we saw it ourselves. If we didn't have had backup when we had the flooding of our data center, it would be in the value of the company that was the price we paid. Mm. We ended up doing, in Danish crowns, it was a three-digit number to selling off our hosting businesses. So that was a lot of money we salvaged by having a small fraction of that going to backup.
Right. Now, you mentioned the Series A, $30 million funding. What will you use that money to do?
Scaling the business. So ultimately, developing the business into new territories, like in the South African territory. It has a lot of great opportunities for us because we share time zone. We also share, actually, the South African market is quite heavily growing and maturing on SaaS workloads like Office 365. Mm-hmm. And we definitely like to see that because that's a maturity that points more towards a solution like Keepit.
Interesting. Now, we recently seen the opening of the Amazon Web Services data center region in Cape Town. And, of course, Microsoft has also announced two Azure data centers in South Africa, both of which have already been launched, one in Cape Town and one in the Johannesburg region. How much of a role did the decision by these two hyperscale data center providers to open up data center facilities in South Africa play in your decision to focus on the South African market?
I think it more supported the decision. We definitely saw the need because of the maturity and the number of licenses being sold and deployed in the South African territory. But having the data center was another validation of the decision.
Now, Frederick, let's get into the meat of this. I think I know you started as a consumer-focused business rather, and have pivoted into the B2B space. And I think for many retail consumers, the assumption is that when you put your data into a cloud service, be it a Microsoft or a Dropbox or whatever it is that you happen to use, that your data that you're uploading and storing there can't get lost or damaged or destroyed. But that's not the case, right?
Nope. That's not the case. So having been in the hosting business for many, many years, there are always a risk. And when you put your data into a cloud service, you are relying on that cloud service. So you need to figure out whether that data you're putting there is actually dispensable or not. Mm-hmm. If it is dispensable, then by all means, go ahead and do it. If it has a level of value where you want to keep it, you need to figure out how you can protect it even further, because ultimately it takes one hack to actually remove the data into your account. So I'm not talking about Google or Microsoft losing the hard drives or getting a fire in the data center, they have that under control. But ultimately, somebody gaining access to your local Dropbox account actually has that button, delete.
Yeah.
And with the GDPR compliance also, when you delete something, it gets deleted. So it only takes a minute or two once you have gained access. And that's not something that people would like to see, especially for their companies. And now using Dropbox as an example is it might be misleading because it's a great solution. But when you move into more complex solutions, productivity solutions like Google Works Workplace or Microsoft 365, mm-hmm. then you actually have a very, very advanced control mechanism that you need to understand. But you don't get any training. You basically get access to a portal with a lot of different controls and policies and buttons that you can click. And they each represent an opportunity to delete your data. So that's the first part that we secure the companies against is the human factor, the misconfiguration, the thing that shouldn't have happened, but still did. A very good example is, I think it was PwC that deployed Teams across the world, and they just had to do a small policy change, very, very standard and classical configuration change they needed to do. Deploying the policy meant that they deleted all the archives in one go.
Ouch.
So that's why you need to keep data in an immutable version outside the domain of whatever provider you're using. Because then you can, when you do that misconfiguration, if you import a lot of fields into your CRM systems, or you actually have a salesperson that deletes hundreds of opportunities, you can quickly revert back to that through a precision insertion of those records. And that's what Keybit is all about.
Do you think, Frederick, that companies are sufficiently aware of the need for them to manage their backups in this way, particularly when they're at the start of their cloud migration journeys? Do you think companies, and in your discussions with your clients and prospective clients, do you find that companies are sufficiently aware of the need for cloud backup?
I definitely think that over the last 3 to 4 years, we have seen an increase in understanding and knowledge about having to deal with the backup, that ultimately you as a customer are responsible for your data. Mm-hmm. You will never, ever get one of the SaaS vendors like Microsoft or Google to actually take that responsibility onto them. So we have seen a maturity with our customers driven by the analysts showcasing that, well, the trash bin of any SaaS solution is not equal to a backup solution. It's still within the confines of your SaaS application. Mm-hmm. And that also entails the identification and the authentication mechanism that is deployed in these applications. So ultimately, once you have that situation where somebody gains access to your account, then your data is a risk.
Now, take us through how cloud-based backup differs, if it does, to on-premises backup. I mean, apart from obviously being happening in a different location, on-premises happening in the basement of your building, whereas cloud is obviously happening in some data center somewhere. But beyond that difference, are there key differences between on-premises backup and cloud backup?
I think that the question is more around software as a service backup. So when we need to back up an application, we can't get access to the databases behind Microsoft Salesforce.
Okay.
We need to leverage the APIs. Therefore, we need to granularly run through all the objects that you have. Make sure that all the objects are then stored inside the Keybit data center locations, which is remote from your production environment. Mm-hmm. And secondly, we also check what are the changes. So ultimately, we go to a very high degree of granularity, whereas you in the old days, when you had your on-premise backup, you backed up the database file.
Right.
Consistently, you did it, full every week, and then you had an incremental, which was basically the log files that you actually shipped over to your backup system, and then you could do sort of a point-in-time restore. Mm-hmm. Now, Keybit continuously adding data. We actually have what we call unlimited incrementals. the unlimited incrementals give you the opportunity to actually roll back and forth in time, and finding that particular point where you want to restore certain data. But you could maybe have been hacked for during several months, and you want to roll back certain parts to one date and other parts to another date. That's very, very simple with Keepit, because we have built up the entire platform to actually cater for you being a DJ of your data. You can actually scroll back and forth, granularly restore a folder from one point in time, a file from another point in time, a permission set for your SharePoint at a third point in time.
Now, you operate your own data centers as well, where you do the backup too. Why is this important? Why not use public hyperscale infrastructure to do the backups as well? I presume there's a key reason why you do this.
Oh, yes. The key reason is we want to remain in control.
Okay.
So we actually co-locate with a global provider called Equinix. Mm-hmm. And Equinix provides us the hardcore facilities, the ping power and pipe, as we call it in the data center outsourcing industry.
Sorry, what do you call it?
The ping power and pipe. So they they have fiber optic cables, and we actually just embed our infrastructure onto those fiber optics, and they have the localities, they have the cooling, the guarding, and you know the different things that you require from the physical location. So we basically rent this, and then we put in our own hardware. We put in our own software, and we have those data centers for each region. We have two data centers that are apart and separated in case of fire, in case of burglary, etc. So they are completely replicated. And the reason for us not choosing, so we did a lot of surveys on the public cloud when we launched Keepit, but we've continually figured out that in order for us to remain in control, also providing a very predictable cost base for our customers, we could do that by building up and having the control of the entire stack. So we own the routing network, we own the IP addresses, we own the hardware that the data gets stored on, we host that across the world for data sovereignty purposes. So right now we have four different data centers, and that all provides the security for the customers that this is actually brought out of the public cloud infrastructure and put onto a separate cloud infrastructure hosted by Keepit in the confines of Equinix data centers.
Understood. Now this actually leads into my next question, because I wanted to ask about what the regulatory implications are, if any, in choosing a SaaS backup provider. Now, you mentioned the issue of data sovereignty. What are some of the regulatory questions that customers should be asking when they are considering a SaaS backup solution?
So they're depending very much on the industry that the customers are in. So it could be financial industries where they have archiving requirements. So data retention is a big thing, which is also part of the story of predictable cost. So with Keepit, you can actually get a predictable cost with a very long data retention period. So we have customers opting for 99 years data retention. That gives them predictability of the cost going forward. We base it on a per user, per seat, or per month basis. The second part that is important from the compliance industry point of view is the GDPR. So GDPR is extremely important to actually reference this, and we've just closed a very significant legal body in Denmark, public sector. So they went through all the legal requirements and actually found that Keepit was the only one that could fulfill the needs of the legal body in Denmark. Mm-hmm. I'm not allowed to disclose the name, but we have seen a lot of these different compliances coming in, HIPAA being one of them, being able to actually identify the records. But I think one of the core strengths of Keepit is that we have a blockchain algorithm sitting underneath in the storage space, where we ensure that the data we receive initially make sure that that data stays immutable throughout the time that data stays with Keepit. So we have this immutability of data for customers, ensuring that nothing can happen to that data, because if something happens to the data, we're not able to actually deliver the data. because of the blockchain computation going on underneath.
That's really interesting. What blockchain are you using, as a matter of interest?
So it's our own implementation. It's an advanced version of a Merkle tree. We keep the keys, but it's a computation of the content and hashing that into bits and bytes. So we have a large number of serializations going on when we receive data.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Interesting. Now, I think we touched briefly earlier in the discussion on cybercrime and why this is important. Hacking incidents, people can lose their data quite easily in cloud environments. Is that primarily, you find, the reason why people are having to restore backups through your service is because they've been hit by cyber criminals? What are the main causes of data loss in the cloud that you find?
So I think the human factor is the most obvious one we see.
Okay.
So we have collaboration tools like OneDrive or Dropbox, for that matter. You tend to have different opinions how to structure data. So it could be just in a small group where somebody deletes a folder because they didn't find it relevant, and then their colleagues come, 3 months after and say, this is important. We have a great customer case with the commercialization arm of Oxford University called Oxford Innovation Lab, and they actually have patents that are running for, I think it's 35 years, so they needed to have a very long data retention period, mm-hmm. because the fact of the matter is that they have teams working on different aspects of patents and different innovations, but they are small teams, and they're very clever professors that knows exactly how to handle IT. So when they have to unjoin a team, they basically just delete the files. I'm now out of the team. But that replicates to the server, et cetera, et cetera. And then 3 years later, when they have an infringement of that patent, they can't find that data. So that's why Keybit helps them. So those are some of the normal routines. Mm-hmm. Then because of our discovery and archiving features of Keybit, we also have a lot of the heavy burden that you have in legal driven industries like the financial industries, that you can actually provide those discovery cases much faster with Keybit.
Now, the topic of digital trust, capital D, capital T, is very topical. First of all, for those who don't know the term, what is digital trust exactly, and what is Keybit's thinking in this regard?
So digital trust is ultimately a replication of what you have. We've just seen it in the U.S., right? You have a democracy built on certain rules and regulations and understanding. And suddenly, when you start shaking that foundation, the trust starts to tremble. Mm-hmm. Same thing goes for your online and your digital experience. So imagine you go to a web shop. Some people might check the SSL certificate, some might not. It might look bogus, it might not look bogus. So how do you actually manage that trust? How do you actually get to that level of where you say, I actually trust this person? During this COVID time, I've seen a lot of contacts that have arisen through LinkedIn, but everybody can create a profile on LinkedIn. So it ultimately comes back to, do we have a third party that can actually give us some kind of a trust? And this is where what we're talking about Keybit is the way we store data is that it cannot change. We have this immutability of the trust, so that when you present that for a judge, it should also be that the judge says, well, based on Keybit's algorithm, I can trust this data. It has not been tampered with throughout the period that they have kept it. So that's one part of the trust. Another part is, of course, do I trust the vendor that I'm putting my data with? Should I have multiple vendors to actually increase the trust and level of security? And that's always been the sort of the name of the game in backup. You need to have your backup data sitting outside where you have your production environment. Mm. So typically you have, your tape libraries somewhere else, or in smaller companies, you took home the tapes with you to your private residence. And then if something happened, you could get back to that. Mm. So trust has a lot of different impacts on this. And digital trust is something that we need to cope with. I don't think we have the complete answer, but I think that Keybit is showing sort of the path deploying technologies like blockchain. deploying technologies where we have this API integration so that you can actually browse the data that we keep so you can compare it to what you have in your production system and see everything aligns. There's no discrepancies. And Keepy can actually also keep an waking eye on how many files were deleted last time we ran a backup against your software service solution. Suddenly increasing the trust across the board. Increasing the trust from the employees is also a very important factor with this democratization of IT, where you have a lot of users spinning off different tangents on a platform like Salesforce or Office 365. They anticipate the company to trust the work they do, and thereby also sort of if the company suddenly can't recover from it, they will lead also a massive trust loss with their employees. So it goes across the board and ultimately ends up with your customers and your partners. If you get hit by something where you lose data that you should have been keeping care of or taken care of, then they would actually lose faith in you.
Frederick, I should have asked this earlier, but which SaaS providers do you work with beyond Microsoft and Google?
Currently we have four production-ready platforms. It's Microsoft 365, Google Workplace, Salesforce.com, and Dynamics 365. Now, if you take then break it apart and look underneath the Microsoft stack, we also have a fair amount of coverage of Azure AD, because unless you have Azure AD, which is the identity of everything cloud in Microsoft, then you sort of, you know, not being able to actually back everything up. We are planning to launch an Azure AD within the next short period. It might be 6 months, might be 4 months. I'm unsure on the roadmap specifics. Mm-hmm. But Azure AD is something that we see a high demand for. ServiceNow is something that we are also launching, and then we're increasing sort of our enterprise capabilities. For instance, more specific tools for the GDPR compliance matter that can keep track of the different work streams that the customers have.
Interesting. Now, we've also spoken about COVID-19 in this podcast and the pandemic, and we've seen the impact that it's had on. Let's not mince words. It's decimated economies around the world. But in the tech sector, there've been a few winners from this. In fact, if you look at the U.S. stock market, some of the big tech companies are at record highs, which I find quite amazing given that what's happening in the rest of the economy. But it is what it is. But I wanted to get your view on how the pandemic has affected the space that you operate in, your business, and the adoption of SaaS backup solutions like KeepIt.
We have definitely seen a very strong impact from the pandemic on our business, led by the Microsoft Teams adoption. I think I just looked at the stats from March, and it seems like they increased the number of active daily users on Teams by 12 million over a period of 7 days. That was an extreme increase. So ultimately, that leads to us seeing companies deploying these digital initiatives that would have normally spent maybe years deploying teams into the infrastructure of the company, but here they needed to implement it from one day to the other to actually enable the remote working capabilities. That has led to them also seeking advice from KeepIt, because I think we were the first one to actually cover Teams end to end. So Teams is not only, you know, the team, which is basically a group inside Microsoft 365, but it actually is a multi-channel communications tool. So you have your chat, you have your planners, you have your files, you have your calendars. All these apps within the team also needs to be protected, including the chats, whether they being public or private chats. And KeepIt goes in and actually helps across the board on all these aspects, giving you as a customer the ability to restore at a click of a button, which you can't get from any other vendor. So with our sort of cloud SaaS native approach, we have been able to support these things from the get-go, and that was a very strong indication of our success during the start of the pandemic, but also here subsequently when people are starting seeing, okay, we have a lot of communications going on in Teams. We need to bring that in. So that has probably been the most significant impact from our customers, is the ask, do you support Teams? And to that, we can say yes, completely.
It's been amazing, actually. I must say, before the pandemic hit, I used to go out two or three times a day to press conference, press events, to go and speak to people, shake hands, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think I've been to a single press conference in 12 months now. There might have been one. the rest is happening through Zoom, through Teams, through other online platforms. It's actually remarkable how quickly we've all shifted, right?
It shifted quite rapidly, and I think that we will remain on that path for a long time forward, even after the end of the pandemic. But we've just learned new ways to collaborate and work together.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the most hard hit business will be the airline industry.
Indeed, and the tourism industry as well is struggling. But Frederick, before we wrap up, we are, of course, a South African podcast with a predominantly South African audience. And let's talk a little bit about the local market and how Keepit sees this market developing going forward. You work through a partner here. You've partnered with a company called Cactus Backup. Tell us a little bit about Cactus Backup, why you partnered with them specifically, how long the relationship has been in place, and what your business expectations are for the South African market.
So I can't exactly remember how long we've been in business with Cactus, but I believe that they have been one of our first partners, and they have shown us a great, you know, sort of, you know, confidence in the tools that Keepit have. And that has been sort of the first point. But also being able to identify the market through Cactus Backup has been important to us. The South African market, even though as exotic it is for a North European citizen, because you have the big six, I think that Cactus also gives us that aiding hand in understanding the local market. And that's where we see a lot of the value. We need to work together with companies that actually are at eye levels with us. We don't need to bring in a very extremely big partner. We need to bring in that partner with the local consensus, understanding of the local market. That's where we can thrive, because they can see the value and keep it. And they know that we will only support the business going through their company. So we definitely like the Cactus Backup. I also think that Cactus Backup has multiple angles, so especially the CRM approach they have, we definitely like that. And we do have a good amount of closely working together, understanding a market which is maturing. Mm-hmm. And that's basically one of the things that we find extremely interesting, is that you have this South African field that is very mature. We also see it in Australia, where we have this a bit remote from the rest of the Western world, that is growing very rapidly. And the same thing we see in South Africa. I think that's why the validation from Microsoft comes with the data centers, Amazon Web Services launching their data centers. We only got announcement in Denmark that Microsoft is launching data centers in Denmark. Amazon is still waiting for that. I think that to many, many extent, South African territory might be even further ahead on the SaaS adoption.
That's very interesting to hear. One just assumes that these data centers are in just about every major developed market, but it's not always the case. I suppose in a market like Europe, where countries are so closely clustered together, it's not always necessary to have a data center in every single country, right?
No. I think that many have lifted sort of the European community as, you know, as long as we just have one data center in the European community, everything is fine. Then we had the Brexit, so suddenly we needed to also bring in data centers in the UK region. We see a lot of demand from our German customers, so we, of course, have a very agile approach to data center setups. Typically, with a fair amount of small amount of users, we can actually set up a data center and make it profitable. Mm-hmm. So if the data sovereignty rises, we have the adoption model for that.
Great. Frederick, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
No, I think it's been a great experience on this podcast. It seems like you're very experienced in this.
I've done a few of them, Frederick. I've done a few of them over the years, but it's been great chatting to you. You're a natural at these too. I think you've done a few of these in the past as well. Frederik Skovo is co-founder of Keepit. He's with us from Denmark today. Thanks for an interesting conversation and all the best with your future endeavors.